listeners. This is Jean McDonald, the host of Voyager Revisited. Before we get to the latest episode, I want to remind you that we are getting close to the end of the Incomparable Network's annual membership drive. The Incomparable brings to you engaging hosts with many great pop culture and sci-fi podcasts, all supported by a fantastic community of listeners. I'd really love it if you'd join us as a member. You can be one of the original supporters of this brand new podcast as we journey to new frontiers in Star Trek podcasting. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll then be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you just check the box for Voyager Revisited, your entire contribution will support this show after a few fees are taken out. If you listen to other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, and I highly recommend that you do, you can check their boxes too, and your contribution will be shared equally by all the shows you want to support. As a thank you for supporting us, members receive lots of extras. There's exclusive bonus audio. There's a bootleg podcast where you can hear shows right after they're recorded without having to wait for the edited version to arrive. And there's a members-only community on Slack. During pledge season, many of the shows on the network will be posting bonus episodes that are just for members. For example, you'll have exclusive access to follow the voyages of the USS Incomparable. That's right. A number of us banded together to do a version of the Star Trek Adventures role-playing game. Scott McNulty from Random Trek is our game master, and Jason Snell is the captain of the USS Incomparable. I serve as Lieutenant Commander Dophy, who is the Bajoran Chief of Security. It really is a lot of fun, and I know the members loved the episode we did last year. And as new members, you'll have access to that too. So if you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. Thanks to everyone who supports The Incomparable. Let's get to this latest Voyager Revisited episode, which is dedicated to my hero, Captain Janeway. This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and on each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan on to talk about Voyager. For this episode, I am very excited to welcome Tammy Coron. Welcome to Voyager Revisited, Tammy.
Thanks, Jean. I'm really excited to be here.
I am really glad that you were able to do this, and kudos to you for coming on an untested podcast.
I do my best work when it's untested. Have you seen my apps and games?
Well, before we get started, would you let the listeners know about who you are and before we get into all the Star Trek stuff?
Well, part of who I am is the Star Trek stuff. I mean, I've been a huge fan of Star Trek for as long as I can remember. I mean, I technically came in on the Star Trek The Next Generation days, but, you know, I quickly went back and watched all the originals and then, you know, Deep Space Nine and Voyager and all the movies. So I'm a big Star Trek buff. I can't even tell you how many Star Trek conventions, and I've met a lot of the people, and just, I am like right in the middle of that Trekker Trekkie thing. I'm not really sure what to call myself just because of my age. Like, I sort of fall in the middle of both of those. But aside from Star Trek, who I am is just I'm a writer, I'm an illustrator, I'm a developer. I'm just sort of anything creative that you can throw at me or anything that you can get me to learn, that's where I am and who I am.
Okay. Yes, and a podcaster, let's not forget, because I've been on your podcast.
That's right. Again, anything you want to throw at me, I'm like, yeah, I've never tried that. Let's go give it a shot.
I enjoyed being on your podcast. And of course, we met at the developer conference 360 iDev, which is a great conference for iOS developers. And I've enjoyed it every year I went. And I always meet interesting people.
Likewise, I had the pleasure of giving the keynote last year, and it was such an incredible experience. I don't even have words. And it's not often you catch me speechless, but I was speechless and I am with that conference.
Well, let's not be speechless about Star Trek. And so, Tammy, what's your so you said you watched starting with The Next Generation. What memories do you have of Voyager coming on, and how did you end up watching that?
That's funny. My mom is a huge Kate Mulgrew. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really good with name pronunciation, but my mom is a big fan of that actress. And we heard, she's also a big fan of Star Trek as well. And we heard that Voyager was coming out and that there was going to be a female captain. And it's not that Star Trek never had female captains in the past. They absolutely have. And in fact, you know, Gene Roddenberry, in my mind, was a visionary. So he, you know, he always had this inclusive and diverse group of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't what drew us to it, but it was certainly something of interest because this was the first time that they ever had a female lead as the main star of the show. So that was, I remember us talking about it and thinking, wow, this is going to be really cool. We finally get to, you know, see a woman at the helm, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember exactly, you know, how that first episode went when we watched it at the time, but I do remember that it came out at the same time, I think, that Deep Space Nine was mm-hmm. running.
Yeah.
And I remember immediately thinking, oh, thank goodness, a show I can actually watch.
Ah, so interesting that we can certainly talk about Deep Space Nine.
Oh, let's not.
let's not then.
It's a terrible show. And my mom always said, if you don't have anything nice to say, keep your darn mouth shut.
Okay. All right. I agree with that. I agree with your mom. Also agree with your mom as a huge Kate Mulgrew fan, because I certainly am, based on this show. I did not watch Ryan's Hope, which was her big breakthrough as an actress, at least, you know, on the small screen. And I say that because I did watch other soap operas back then in the day. That was kind of our thing as teenage girls and even college girls. We watched Guiding Light and General Hospital and all that. But Ryan's Hope, Kate Mulgrew was the star of, and she, but seeing her on Star Trek Voyager, I was like, I love this person. I want her to be my captain. If I needed a captain, I would definitely want her. And then, a few years ago, she wrote her memoir and, published it. It's called Born with Teeth, which is actually true. She, as a baby, had like some weird aberration where she had little teeth in her jaw. So, okay. And of course, it's an amazing story. Her life story is incredible. But when she was on tour as an author, I noticed she wasn't coming to Portland, which was unusual, but going to Seattle. And I thought, you know what? I'm just taking the train and I'm going to go see Kate Mulgrew in person. And it was amazing. I'm so glad I did that. She read from the book and she told stories. And everybody, if you're interested in her, you should read that book, because she it's not very long, but it's very powerful. So yeah, I am
I wonder,
a fan.
Does she have that as a as an Audible where she's reading it herself? Because I absolutely love to listen to people tell their stories, which is why I do my show Roundabout, because the story behind the people to me is more fascinating than the people.
Yeah.
The people, if that makes sense. I don't know if that really makes sense, but I know what I mean in my head. It sounded great. Everyone else is probably shaking their head going, what did you just say? But I think, and it's kind of the same thing with Captain Janeway's story. Like, she has such an incredible story. And to your point about, if I could have a captain be my captain, I would want Janeway to be my captain. I think she shows an amazing resolve, and she's always so clear and level-headed. That's who I would want to be led by.
Yeah. By the way, I did just quickly check out the Audible catalog, and Born with Teeth is narrated by Kate Mulgrew.
So. Excellent. I have to tell my mom about this. My mom probably already has it. Who am I kidding? My mom probably already has it and listened to it like six times.
It's and it's unabridged, so 10 hours, which I think is good, because it's not a very long book in print, and she has so many stories. And you just love her. I mean, I liked her from Star Trek, and then I just, you know, I've come to have her as one of my, she's kind of my idol. Like, maybe Captain Janeway is my idol. In fact, I used to rewatch Voyager. This one I really became a fan is that I was, it was the first summer of App Camp for Girls, which is the program that I started in 2013. And, you know, that was a lot of work and still is a lot of work to put together a program teaching girls how to make iPhone apps. And it was kind of all on me because, you know, it was my vision of how I wanted it to be. So I would be printing stuff out and making like handouts like late into the night, every night of that week. But I still needed to wind down at the end of the night. And I thought, I need to watch something, but something I've already watched so that I don't feel like the need to stay up late at night to find out what happens. And I thought, ooh, maybe Voyager. And it was perfect because I just watched Kate Mulgrew. I watched Captain Janeway, what she did, like every episode, where how her leadership worked. And it became my personal motto of like, what would Janeway do at App Camp, you know? So Janeway is, you know, she lets people do the things that they're good at. She doesn't micromanage, but she also doesn't hesitate to be there for people and help them out. But she's kind, but not in a way that makes you doubt whether she has like strong will, you know, and will do what needs to be done in the end. So anyway.
Well, no, that's entirely true because, you know, they say one of the traits of a good leader is to know when it's time to step back and let those who you've entrusted with a certain task or multiple tasks to rise up to the challenge. You know, a leader is someone, a strong leader is someone who brings people up, that gives them the reins when they need it and leads them along when they need that. And she has proven time and time again in every episode that I've seen, and now the ones that I'm rewatching, thanks to being on your show, by the way. In every episode, she has demonstrated that leadership. And I can see clearly why you would look to her while you're trying to do the same thing for the girls at App Camp for Girls. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Like here you have a bunch of young girls coming in and trying to learn the ropes and figure out what to do. And some of these young girls and women will have strengths that maybe you didn't necessarily have yourself. And you, I'm sure that you turned it over to them, the leaders within your App Camp girls, to figure out what to do next when you didn't have the answers and to sort of support them. Maybe you didn't always agree with them because you didn't fully understand it. Like Janeway has been put in situations where she didn't really have all of the information or all of the skills to do something. Mm-hmm. Surrounded herself by people who did, and she trusted in her decision to bring those people in to do the right thing or the next thing. So, yeah, I totally see why she's your hero.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, honestly, that is probably the reason that this show is my favorite, because she's my favorite captain by a long, you know, shot. But she's also, you know, I relate to her, at least I, you know, would like to have some of the qualities that she always is exemplifying on the show. But one of the things we talked about a little bit before the show is what about the other characters? Scott McNulty on the first episode of this podcast talked about how he found Voyager character list overall just wasn't as strong as the shows that he liked better than Voyager, you know. And I was curious where you stand. After Janeway, who are your favorite characters, I guess I would ask. And we can go, instead of going from the negative side.
Yeah, there's probably a lot more that I'm not in tune with. We'll go with those mm-hmm. choice of words than the ones that I am tuned up to. Mm-hmm. I would say that Chakotay is probably my second favorite, just because mm-hmm. I liked the dynamic that him and Janeway had. And I like the fact that, again, it's been so long since I've seen any of the episodes until recently, where I just started to watch them to prep, kind of prep for this show. And I had an opportunity to rewatch the first pilot. I think it was a two-parter. And the way that those two, you know, they were sort of on opposing ends, and yet they found a way to come together and to work together to reach a common goal. And I like that about them. And the other episode that I watched before the show, and I'm terrible with episode names or numbers or even seasons, but it was the one where they got ill. They had some sort of illness, and they had to be left on a planet.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Shoot, I forgot the title of that one too, but I know the one. It's they contract some kind of illness that if they beam back to the ship, they'll die. So the ship has to leave them behind.
Yeah, and it was so great to see, like, he anticipated her needs by listening to what she said. And she didn't necessarily say or give a direct order. For example, the bathtub. She didn't say, Chakotay, build me a bathtub because I want one. He heard her through her words and through her actions that having a bathtub would make this experience a lot better for her. And he took it upon himself to do that. And I think that dynamic and that relationship just really, it's kind of like my husband and I, where I don't necessarily, we have this joke. He may wear the pants in the family, but I tell him which ones to put on. So it's kind of like the same thing.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And I would say after that would be Seven of Nine. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get a chance to watch any or rewatch any episodes with her before this show. Mm-hmm. So I can't speak to the specifics as to why I like her. It's a memory that I have of her that I know that I liked her. I just don't remember why I liked her. Just that she was very likable for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, she was very competent, you know, and she wasn't afraid at all to exhibit that competence and also to reflect on the lack of competence of some of the people around her. So it was a little bit, maybe it's like a fantasy moment where like a woman gets to be not only, you know, the one who knows the most, but is also allowed to just totally own that and not be trying to make other people around her feel better, even if they're not as smart as she is.
Right. And I think, you know, I'm trying to reach back into my memory here. If I were to just go based on what I remember, which is probably not accurate at all, the idea of Seven of Nine and her history of being part of the Borg and breaking free and you know, through the help of others, being able to find her own individual self, I think that maybe I feel drawn to that story because it's kind of, I mean, I'm not a Borg or anything, nor was I ever a Borg.
I'm glad but to hear I, that.
Right? Resistance is futile, by the way. But the point is, you know, I, in my own history, my own private personal history, I always felt like having to be part of the group and never really having my own mindset. And through the help of other people, I was able to break free from that and find out who I was, what was my individuality, and how can I use that in a powerful way to, you know, help people as opposed to hurt them. And I kind of feel maybe that's why I like Seven of Nine. I don't know. That's just my memory of it.
Well, no, I think that's pretty accurate. You know, her character arc certainly goes from being the most destructive type of alien, you know, known to the Star Trek universe, to being somebody who is super useful and helpful as a crew member on Voyager. And she's certainly one of my favorites as well. And I think that character, you know, really did make the last half of the Voyager series a lot stronger because she was unique compared to everything else that we've seen before. What do you think about did Voyager and Janeway get a fair shake?
Well, let's go back to the mid-90s when that show came out. Now, I said earlier that Gene Roddenberry, in my mind, was a visionary. I mean, I say it every time I walk through like an automatic door at a grocery store. They just sort of like open. I'm like, you know, Gene Roddenberry thought of that before that even happened. But, you know, all kidding aside, like, he placed the characters. He had diversity. He had all types of aliens and breeds and races and people and sexuality and things that you weren't allowed to be doing at the time he was doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And then the 90s comes along, and Gene's not really too much involved in this. And what do they do with their first female captain that's in a lead role of a TV series? Again, I know that there was other female captains, but they didn't have the spotlight. So now you got the spotlight on Janeway. And what do? They toss her 70,000 light years away from anything and everything. And I can't help but think to myself, huh, yep, that's about what they tried to do with strong women back then. Toss them aside and let them figure it out, you know? Did they get a fair shake? I think that I really enjoy the show. I'm already re-enjoying it now. I enjoyed it back then. Whether or not she got a fair shake, I almost don't think that it matters. You know, if we were to just look at the captain mm-hmm. and see where she was in her mindset and what she was doing, it didn't matter what kind of shake she got. She was going to make the best of it and lead. And come on, she got everybody home. So yeah. There's that. And having rewatched that first part, you know, part one and part two, I was talking to my mom at the time I was watching. It was just a couple hours ago. I mm-hmm. finished it. And I couldn't help but laugh because Kim came on board and he said something to the effect, and I'm definitely paraphrasing, he said something to the effect of, "What, sir?" And she says, "You know, according to Starfleet protocol, I know that you should address me by sir, but I really don't like that." And he says, "Okay, yes, ma'am." And she says, "You know, I don't really like that either. Let's yeah. just go with captain." And I was like, boom, right there. That's it right there. That just describes everything I ever cared about Janeway or why I liked her in that one moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that too. And she, I mean, it's like, why not captain? Like, why? Honestly, I think by 2371, sir and ma'am won't really exist anymore as words that people use. But right now, we're still struggling with those honorifics.
It's kind of like doctor. It's like I've never run into someone who's a doctor who didn't appreciate being addressed as doctor. I mean, they went through all that trouble to become one. You don't say and address a doctor by sir doctor or ma'am doctor. It's just mm-hmm. doctor. And I wish we were already there. I mean, yes, you know, it's important to have, and I don't want to say labels. I absolutely hate labels, but it's important to understand that, you know, different people make up different things mm-hmm. and we're all unique, and together we have to find a way to live on this planet together. And I think part of doing that is being accepting and open of people, but also to drop some of these labels. Like mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if she is a male or a female captain. What matters right. is she's a captain.
Right. Yeah. I think she did a really great job of that. And that was one of the things that just felt new and exciting about this series, is to have a woman, and it wasn't a show about women. You know, like, it wasn't right. a show about her being a woman in space. It was a show about this incredibly competent captain who happened to be a woman. And certainly the crew never treated her with anything less than that kind of respect.
I think that's the evolution that you were looking for. Sure, maybe they still have these pronouns that they're using, but I think the point is, at least in Roddenberry's eyes, is that we all are just people. We all are aliens.
Right.
You know, whatever the case may be. But we can see beyond those labels and see the individual for who the individual is and their accomplishments and sometimes even their faults. I mean, you know, I'm the person I am today because of all of the mistakes I've made and hopefully learned from. I'm not a woman who codes. I'm not a woman who illustrates. I'm not a woman who writes. I'm a writer. I'm a coder. I'm an illustrator. That's it. I don't need that other definition of who I am. It's not mm-hmm. important.
No, I agree. And so, speaking of learning from one's mistakes, I think it would be interesting. So I gave you a homework assignment to watch a episode, one of my favorite, if not my favorite episodes of Star Trek Voyager, especially if one that features Janeway, is called Deadlock. And it's from season 2, so fairly early on, episode 21. And I just thought it would be interesting to talk about some of the specifics of what was going on in the show and what was happening with Janeway. And, you know, before I get into that, I just want to remind people who are listening, we are really going to talk about the show if you haven't watched it. And we, you know, there may be spoilers for other things in Star Trek Voyager. So if you haven't watched it all and you hate to be spoiled, maybe you want to exit the podcast now. But
whoops, I think I gave way too many spoilers in the beginning.
I don't think so. Yeah, so Deadlock, I think the appeal of it, of course, is that there's two ships. There's two Janeways. There's two Voyagers. And how that happens is very techno-babbly. There's some kind of some kind of temporal scission that they go through as they're trying to escape from the Vidians. Do you remember the Vidians? They're not really much in this episode, but, you know, they are the threat, like the big bad of the episode. Do you remember anything about them? Because they're kind of my favorite Voyager alien / enemy group.
They're so mean.
They're so mean. Well, they're mean and they're creepy. They have a very technologically advanced society, but everybody is afflicted with this disease called the phage, which just destroys their bodies from the inside out. I mean, it's almost like they're super lepers or something of space. And they develop this incredibly advanced medical technology in order to help them harvest body parts throughout the galaxy, I guess.
But we should be real clear and remind people that they're not harvesting from people like organ donors.
No.
They're harvesting them from people who are, you know, kind of still alive.
Yes.
That's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, they really have an ethical dilemma at the heart of their society.
They sure do.
And they sure- yeah, they're one of the first, in fact, they're the second Delta Quadrant aliens that the Voyager crew has to contend with. The first being the Kazon, who are the ones in the pilot, but they very quickly meet the Vidians. Anyway, just to set it up, for this episode, the fact that they might be caught by the Vidians is no small matter because they know that they could easily be overcome by them. Their people have already been kidnapped by them in the past, and it doesn't, you know, doesn't go well. Neelix doesn't even have lungs because of them. Neelix had his lungs, donated his lungs, as it were. And had to have holographic lungs for a while until Kes actually donated one of hers to Neelix. But anyway.
And what a beautiful relationship those two have.
Yes.
Sorry, that's a side thing.
Yes.
But that relationship was so wonderful.
We could do a whole show, and we could do a whole show about Kes and Neelix.
And you should do it. You
plan
absolutely
on,
have
yeah,
to.
It's oh, on good. My list. It's on my list. But yeah, so the ship is trying to hide in some, I already forgot what, ion storm or something. And
it was a plasma storm.
Plasma storm. And then
plasma storms, they just sneak up on you.
Right. You never can get good forecasts for where those plasma storms are going to show up.
That ruins my Wi-Fi every time.
So they have this crew of Voyager. They've gone through this plasma storm and then they've lost like all their power and they're trying to restart their antimatter process and they're planning to use like proton bursts. Believe me, I have little, if any, understanding of what this actually means, but I can't ever help but think about the actors learning these lines and making them sound like they are make a lot of sense. But before they can do that, they get hit by a proton burst themselves, and the ship starts to be destroyed by this. And they have no idea what's going on. And as a viewer, I remember the first time I saw this, it was like, huh, I wonder what's happening.
Well, that's strange.
Yeah. And I mean, that people die, a baby dies, like, because they don't
have
power. Wasn't that heartbreaking, right? I thought, Oh, what show lets a baby die? And what, right? You know, and Harry Kim, like a major character, you know, falls out of a breach in the hull.
Right. Okay. I got to stop you right there. That is the one thing that it like totally stood out when I was watching this show last night. Cause again, it's been a long while since I've seen it. So I rewatched it last night and I'm watching it and I see this, the whole breach, and I see him sort of like hanging out kind of in space and still having a conversation with, I think he was with Kes. I don't
it
even
was
remember.
Torres.
It was Torres, right.
Save him.
And I looked to my father-in-law who's staying with us for a few days. I looked at him. I said, there's no, he would have froze like immediately. She would have been sucked out too, or maybe blown out. I'm like, do you believe the stuff they pushed to us in the 90s? And we were like, wow, that's so cool. But yeah, I couldn't believe that they killed him. I was like, no.
I know. And it was only the second season. And for all we know, you know, as new viewers, like I did not watch this as it aired, but I didn't look ahead or read ahead. I just watched it, you know, one after another. Streaming, and you know, I thought, oh, that's pretty brave of Star Trek to kill off a major member of the bridge crew. But
well, if they're killing babies, why not kill the bridge crew, right?
Yeah, babies first. Like, no babies should die, or dogs, but that's one of my rules. I mean, the whole bridge is falling apart, and Janeway is leaving the bridge, and just like as she's leaving, she sees sort of a ghost image of the bridge, as it is normally, with her sitting in the captain's chair and everybody in their positions. And then the whole thing switches to the point of view of that captain. And it was like, what is going on here?
I mean, could you imagine sitting there and your bridge just being torn apart by God knows what? And then all of a sudden you see like your ghost self and your ghost crew and you're like, what?
Yeah. And they don't seem to be under terror of their bridge falling apart and their ship falling apart as well. And so, yeah. So then Janeway number two, that's what I'm calling her in my notes. Janeway two on Voyager two is like, I just saw myself leave the bridge and please scan for that. And nobody goes like, what are you talking about? You must be crazy. They're like, yes, Captain, we will do that. And then they show the baby being born again, or the baby's all fine and everybody's healthy. There were a lot of little reveals the way they did them that I was like, oh yeah. When I saw this the first time, I was like, what is happening? When the doctor says, yeah, how's our other patient? They have another patient besides the, you know, baby. But Kes is in the, two Kesses in sick bay, because Kes number one went through some kind of spatial rift and ended up on the second Voyager. And nobody is like, how can we have two Kesses? It's just like, yep, we have two. And one is like slightly out of phase with the other.
And no, so, big.
No big deal. So that's how they get information about what's happening on Voyager number one, is through Kes. And, you know, they're just trying to put the pieces together. It's really a cool episode in the way that everything is happening on Voyager, either one or two, but it's all happening with this, the same crew and the same captain and ship. So trying to figure out that they are actually, you know, shooting proton bursts at themselves, or you know, at their double, and that Voyager one is under siege from Voyager two, and so they have to stop shooting those proton bursts, but that's not going to help with the energy situation. Anyway, you know, all of it to get to a point where Janeway is able to communicate. Janeway two figures out how to communicate with Janeway one. and they get to talk to each other over the communications channel. And that was like Janeway to Janeway. Very good. That was my favorite part of this, is just seeing the two Janeways work it out, what they were going to do.
Yeah. And there were so many things about that episode that, you know, I was trying to find the inner meaning, if you will, about how can I relate this to something that's not Starfleet based? Because with all the Star Trek episodes I've ever seen, I've always been able to find a way to tie it back to what I like to call, you know, the here and now or our reality. Now, of course, and I'm sure I saw that episode when it first aired, but when I watched it last night, you know, there's a very different feeling in the 90s than there is today. And sure, they killed a baby on this show, which was kind of dark at the beginning. But I think television today is a whole lot darker than that, if you can even imagine that.
Yeah.
So I immediately went to, because again, I couldn't remember the episode. I barely remembered the characters when I first went into it last night. So here I am watching this, and you know, the other Kes, the phased out Kes, shows up in sick bay. And I immediately went to that dark place, like, oh gosh, what is she doing here? What is she trying to take over? When is she going to reveal that she's here to kill all of the crew and take things over? Because that's kind of how television and movies happens today. Like, there's always that right. bad guy that you never expect. And then when I remember that the show was made in the 90s, I'm like, oh, right, they will have a happy ending because it's Star Trek and it'll be fine. So let me just push through this fear and see what happens. So how can I relate this to the here and now, which is technically what, like 10, 15 years, 20 years later? So the best thing I got out of it, or the thing that I could relate to the most, is so here you've got these two Janeways, very strong will. I mean, they're the same person, right? They're just... They're phased out. They're not even different timelines. They're just right. different things are occurring at the same time. And they're really the same thing. You know, they're not supposed to be split like that. It's not string theory. It's not an alternate universe. They have the same experiences, the same everything, you know?
Right.
But right now, their right now is different. And how is that right now different? How does this tie back? Well, let's look. We've got the two Janeways. We've got one who inadvertently fired on herself, didn't realize she was doing it, but basically is essentially destroying her own ship in a different phased out plasma thing. And you would think that, you know, ultimately they have to decide, we have to merge back together and one of us is going to disappear. And I'm thinking, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, the Janeway whose ship is most destroyed, the baby died, there's other crew, Kim's gone, you know, there's all these negative things happening in that part of the plasma cloud, for lack of a better term. All those bad things are happening, and they happened as a result, for the most part, of the, we'll call her the good Janeway, the one who's in a better position, kind of destroying the one who's in a bad position. So you've got this good Janeway going along and she makes some bad choices that ends up in a really bad way. She's got this other Janeway who's losing all these things. You would think that the next course of action to merge these two would be to get rid of that bad one, right? That bad one, it's destroyed. There's fire. People died. Let's get rid of it. And the good one, you know, the one whose ship is still together, they made the right choice in firing the photon blast because that is technically, I guess, what saved them all. But you've got this good one and you're like, okay, this makes sense. In my own world, I would want to get rid of the bad and keep the good. And that is what the two Janeways decide. And the other thing, while I was watching it, when they were having their conversation together in engineering, I was like, gosh, they're so close. Personal space people. After I got over that, that's my own little thing. You know, everyone was in agreement. Let's get rid of the bad stuff because bad things happen. So let's self-destruct that. And then you all can take the resources and energy you need and continue on because you're in better shape. And big, huge spoiler alert, that doesn't work out because those bad guys who want to steal your organs, they show up. I call them the jerks of the world. They show up. They want to take all your good stuff and use it for their own stuff. And you're like, no, we're not doing that. So the Janeway, who's in what you would think would be a better position just moments ago, now has to be the one that says, you know what? If they board us, they're going to steal our people's organs and this, that, and the other things. So she ultimately decides that she's the one who has to self-destruct and take the crew out, her own crew, herself out, everybody out, which then leaves the one in a bad position left standing. So I'm thinking to myself, I know I'm rambling a lot here and just blah, 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 but here's what I took from that whole thing. I'll try and boil it down to a less rambly idea here. Even though you think things are so bad and you can't recover and there's no way out and just all these bad things are happening, you need to take a look at what's going on and have a different perspective. You know, the Janeway who was in a better position wasn't really in a better position. The bad guys showed up. They were ready to kill everybody. So she acted selflessly, I believe, to save her other self who may not have been in a better position. But during that time, they sent over the new Kim from the other place. So Kim is still alive. And because the baby lived in the good reality, they sent the baby over, and it's Star Trek, so there was a happy ending. But the point is, you know, even though things seem bleak and gloomy and like everything is going wrong, sometimes you have to get through that and come out on the other side to be okay. And that's what I took from that episode. Like, even though things go to crap, push through it. It's okay. You may not understand or see everything that's going on around you, but you'll get through it on the other side and have a baby and Kim who didn't get flown out of the ship, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really good takeaway from this, which I hadn't considered, but it makes perfect sense. Because, of course, as you're watching it, you think, oh, yeah, one ship is in good shape and one ship is in terrible shape. So they got to go with the good ship and, you know, they got to self-destruct one of them. Both Janeways recognize that the other one is going to do that. Like they know, obviously they know each other. I think personal space doesn't really come into it because it's two, they're the same person, so they don't really mind being so close to each other.
Oh, that was killing me, Gina. No idea. I'm like, back up.
You know, the fact that they know each other has like a certain like moral compass about the whole thing, that self-destructing the ship, you know, to sacrifice for the greater good is something they would either one of them are going to gladly do. That they, it's kind of like, I know I can't talk you out of it.
Right. And you know, it's that polarizing thing with the baddies showing up trying to destroy another race of people because they need their organs. And meanwhile, you've got both Janeways willing to sacrifice themselves and their crew to save somebody else. So it's that polarizing part was also very interesting to me.
No, it's true. I mean, really, the Vidians should have self-destructed themselves.
Right? Where's Q when you need him?
Right. Well, yes. I don't know if he would make the situation better or worse. But
oh, he would make it worse, but it would be entertaining.
But yeah, that moment where you realize like, oh my God, the ship that you thought was going to survive, that was in great condition and nobody had died on it yet, is the one that's going to self-destruct. And Voyager's going to go ahead with this, you know, crew that's had all these injuries and all this suffering. But, you know, throwing the baby and Kim over to the other side, that was a trick. And I never can forget that about that baby, because she's a regular character throughout the series. She grows up rather fast, maybe because of the phase problem, you know, and becomes like, you know, sort of like a elementary school age kid later on in the series. And Naomi Wildman, and she's...
Scarlett Palmer's, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And she's one of my favorite characters because I like her little smart alecky, you know, smart girl on a ship, and she wants to be captain someday. But I think, does she know that she's not really the baby of the Ensign Wildman that is on this ship? She's weirdly adopted. I mean, you can't go there with this kind of conundrum. If you start thinking about it, you just go crazy and get a headache.
Now you know why my handle on all social media is Paradox927, because the world is paradoxical. Is that even a word, paradoxical? I'm going to make it a word if it's not. But I mean, just growing up watching science fiction and being a part of that universe has allowed me to expand my mind and think like, yeah, all things are possible. It doesn't matter what they are. They're all possible. Yeah. I mean, if you can throw a baby into another plasma cloud and it comes out on the other side, dude, I mean, what else is there?
So that's how the episode ends, they self-destruct with all the like 300 plus Vidians on board. I mean, one of the reasons that Janeway is self-destructing is not just to, you know, like prevent them from harvesting her crew, but also harvesting their technology. That's always a theme throughout, that they don't want this advanced Starfleet technology falling into the hands of people in the Delta Quadrant, because who knows what chaos that would end up in. I think there's more than a few times where self-destruct is on the menu.
When you have it on speed dial, that's when you need to worry. I just loved hearing Majel Barrett's voice again.
Yes.
Majel Barrett is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, out of the entire Star Trek universe. And I actually got the opportunity to meet her and chat with her. And so exciting.
Like, that's just cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a neat thing that they did, you know, is to keep the computer voice throughout all the series and also use Majel Barrett for a character in Deep Space Nine and the Next Generation.
She was Deanna Troi's mother.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a true character. But yes, a lot of fun. Are you watching Star Trek Discovery?
I'm not currently watching it, but my plans are to watch it. And I have seen enough of it to know that I think I'll like it.
I just bring it up because, you know, they do bring in the old Enterprise. And so they have the old computer voice at one point. And they now can say that Majel Barrett is the only one to have been in every series of Star Trek, including Discovery. So
perfect.
With that, I think we ought to wrap it up, Tammy. And thank you so much for coming on to this show.
You are very welcome. And thank you for inviting me.
Anytime. And I would love to have you back on for another, after you watch, now that you're on a rewatch.
Thanks for that. Like, I didn't have anything else to do.
Just think of the Vidians are like space zombies. Okay.
They kind of look like it.
I want to also thank the listeners for being here too. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. And you can also follow the show on Twitter and on micro.blog at Voyager_cast. This show is one of many pop culture podcasts found on the Incomparable Network. We are doing our annual membership drive right now, and we'd love to have your support so we can keep making these fun shows. You can go to theincomparable.com/members to learn more. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. So until then, time's up.